Welcome to Data Science Perspectives. This series focuses on analytics and data science professionals from across industry to learn about how their career unfolded, what skills they look for when hiring, and what trends they think are coming next. I'm your host, Bill Franks. Let's get to it. Welcome to this episode of Data Science Perspectives. I'm your host, Bill Franks. Today, we're going to be joined by Scott Radcliffe of Emory University. Scott and I first met nearly 20 years ago when he was with Nextel, which is now part of T-Mobile. He's been a fixture in the analytics community around Atlanta ever since. Scott started in analytics at Nextel before moving to spend 5 years with SAS in their communications, media, and entertainment organization. He then had roles with both IBM and Home Depot before spending 6 years with Cox Communications as executive director in their analytics organization. He made a change in 2019 and joined Emory as the managing director of the Master of Science in Business Analytics program. And in this role, he helps students get real-world project experience as part of their degree. He also does some side consulting through his companies Lytic and Vajra Partners. Scott has a bachelor's in sociology from University of Tennessee Chattanooga and a master's in sociology and quantitative methods from the University of Georgia. And with that, let's welcome Scott to the show. Well, Scott, thanks for joining me on the show today.
Bill, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Well, it's always good to talk with you. And the one thing I like to start with my guests is to dig into how they got into analytics to begin with. I know that you initially came out of school, you had both a bachelor's and a master's in sociology, and then you moved over and spent most all your career in the world of data and analytics. So how did you make that move?
Yeah, well, actually, it wasn't a move, because in sociology, there's kind of two sides of it. There's kind of the quantitative side, which is very practical. They do a lot of program evaluation, which I'll give an example of. And then there's kind of the social theory side. So I was in the quantitative side. And so basically where I first used good old SAS was in the computing lab in graduate school, where we were applying that to, you know, data related to human situations, social problems, that kind of stuff. So, you know, I ultimately, when I finished graduate school, I quickly found that although I had a great experience, I went to work for the labor department doing labor market forecasting, that I was ultimately more interested in business just because of the dynamic nature and the opportunity to get into a greater variety of industries.
You bring back a memory with your mention of the computer lab. I think today's students would find it horrifying to know that there literally used to be a central room on campus that you had to go and hope that you could get a seat at to do your computing.
That's right. That's exactly right. Green screen terminal on a VAX VMS mainframe.
Well, you know, I know that over the years since I've known you, you had a couple of different roles at some big companies, but you had a lot of focus on the various aspects of the media and entertainment and communications industries. So what drew you into that? And were there some common data and analytics challenges you've seen over the years in that industry sector?
Sure. I would say overall, it's a couple of things. First of all, when I first entered that industry in the late 90s, as many people know, the mobile and broadband business was just blowing up. Right at that time, everybody didn't have broadband and mobile phones. So the business was trying to scale really fast, right? And so the implication of that is in many areas of the business, they were starting to aggressively adopt analytics for everything from operations, customer management, marketing, because they had to scale this thing quickly to maximize revenue, but as well as manage costs. So they were applying it across, you know, a wide spectrum of the business. Number two, it was a situation where, because it's the mobile world, the internet, all of that, the volume of data available was exploding as well. So that was the primary driver, I would say. You know, and quite frankly, another aspect of it is, as you know, once you kind of develop a reputation and expertise in a particular area, you kind of have inertia, you know, but more than just inertia, it's like you understand the problems and the related data and the associated business processes quite well. So many times you tend to, you know, kind of leverage that into your successive roles.
I know one thing that fascinated me over the years, like in your time at Cox Communications, people would think about, I think the average person would think about analytics within a cable company context being about customer analytics or somehow looking at what people are watching, when in reality, it's a huge technology problem around delivering what's really data, all of those shows, all of that content across the network. And I think it was, correct me if I'm wrong, but there was as much, if not much more, analytics happening that were really those operational analytics to support the movement of all that content than there was around analyzing the people that were using the content.
Very, very much so. And Bill, that was my focus there at Cox Communications. So for example, everybody knows that bandwidth keeps increasing, right? And the demand, you know, it's demand driven. So one of the things that people kind of don't know what goes on behind the scenes is that there is a continual transformation and expansion and adding new technologies to the network, right? Because you can't just go out and replace whole pieces of the network. So what's happening is that new software, for example, new compression technologies to get more bandwidth out of the same pipe, that's happening continually, as well as upgrades in the actual hardware. So essentially, one of the things that my team spent a lot of time was essentially harvesting data from the network elements themselves and using that information to predict when customer disruptions or poor customer experiences might happen. So instead of waiting for something to break and the alert being customers calling you upset, right, that we could get ahead of that problem. And with, you know, a variety of predictive modeling techniques, kind of alert the network operations organization to, hey, we're seeing patterns develop over here that indicate an outage or a disturbance somehow. You know, that could be delay, jitter, usually not 100% outage, that the conditions are right such that this has a higher probability of happening rather than wait for customers to call in, go look at this. Right. And so not only does that improve the customer experience, but ultimately it reduces the operational expense.
That's fascinating. I just think the average person has no idea of what goes into letting them stream that show in the evening.
That's right. And, you know, and not only that, not only the network elements themselves, but that set-top box in your house. And by the way, this would apply to Roku and Google TV and whatever. In addition to information about what content is being streamed, that device continually gives off information about its fundamental operating characteristics, right? Packet errors, temperature, you know, the level of demand over the device over time, all of those things come into play so that this is another thing we did where we could actually monitor the performance of the device such that if a customer called, we could have an idea, well, is this a network problem or is this a device problem?
Well, you've had a very broad experience background. You know, we just talked about some time at Cox. I know you're also at other, what I'll call client side companies. You spent some time at SAS, which is the product side. You spent some time at IBM on the consulting side. So you've kind of hit three of the most general areas that people can focus. And not many people have done all of those. So What did you see as some of the pros and cons of each, the product, the client, and the consulting side? And like, if you're a student today, what would draw you to or push you away from those as a career choice?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I love to talk about that. I kind of talk about my journey very often with our students here. So, you know, I would say that on the client side, one of the positives is that you can get really deep into a particular industry or business, right? So you really learn the data, you really learn the business processes, the metrics that kind of indicate business performance, all of that stuff. Now, of course, as you might imagine, the downside of that is if you stay in that industry or that company for a really long time, kind of on the client side, you're kind of locked into that perspective. And so you don't get sort of that breadth of exposure to different kinds of problems and data sets that you do, say, moving on to the next kind of role I had, which was in consulting, right? Where you're going to have more exposure to different clients, a wider variety of data sets that you get to explore, and those kinds of things. Then, of course, as you mentioned, I moved on to SaaS. You know, that was a great, great experience for me. Even though, you know, in SaaS, I remained kind of in the communications and media industry, I got to travel the world. I had a global team. And what was really cool about that experience is that because essentially my team was doing a combination of kind of product development, business development, and consulting, what I was able to learn, because we were working mainly with kind of executives and kind of talking to them about their problems, kind of in the big sense, and whether it was top line or bottom line, and then doing proof of concepts based on that understanding of their business problem to demonstrate the possible financial return of this analytic application applied to a specific kind of problem. So through that process, I really, really learned a lot about kind of at that strategic level, how to help an organization think about its business in the context of investments in analytics, data, and technology, and then how do we think about how we're going to make money from those investments?
Nice. So, I mean, that's a broad range of different types of experience. What are the fundamental one or two skills or traits that you think you have that enabled you to succeed across that broad spectrum?
Yeah, I would say probably the most important one is an ability to kind of look at any system, right? And this goes back all the way back to my sociology days, right? Any business, right? It's a system that has a number of associated processes with some overarching goals in the case of business, you know, revenue and cost, ultimately profit, of course. And to be able to kind of step back from the analytics problem itself, right? Don't start there. Don't, as we say here to our students, don't smash the watermelon in an attempt to get into the data right away, right? Understand the business context, the financial objectives, and the associated business processes. So it's that abstraction and understanding of the real world environment which sets one up for success in delivering an analytical solution that actually has business impact. Which, by the way, is not a given. You know, unfortunately, you know, I can think of many times in my career, both as a consultant on the client side and on the software side, right, where the end client, the organization, had an appetite to try and, you know, adopt analytics to improve some part of their business, but they didn't fully appreciate fully appreciate what that journey is like. And it's not just buying data management facilities and software and data scientists, right? It's how do you help the organization understand what these investments mean in terms of the broader organization and organizational change and financial management and all of that stuff.
Yeah, it is interesting. Everybody who makes it to a senior level in analytics really, I hear it again and again. It's not about your analytical skills, although those help you start your path, but it's about being able to translate those skills into helping a business on
analytics. You bet. Now, I will say this. We haven't got to talking about the early career. Maybe I'm jumping the gun. But my personal belief and my experience, both, from my own career, as well as, the many, many people that I've hired and managed in analytics teams, is that the most important thing right out of school is, quite frankly, to hone your craft, right? To learn the ins and outs of, right? Not only, as we talked about, how do you effectively interact with the business to design the business problem? But the very basic fundamentals of how do you look at an ERD, right? And understand the data well enough to start to figure out, okay, given the analytical solution that's probably in mind here, how does this data architecture fit into some series of steps I'm going to have to do to create some type of analytical data structure, right? And not only that thinking process, but quite frankly, and I'm, it doesn't amaze me. It's just part of the environment getting your career started in analytics. And it's been this way my entire career is you got to know SQL. That's table stakes, right? We always talk about, fancy machine learning and ChatGPT and whatever, but earlier in your career, SQL and these days Python, it's table stakes. It's table stakes in the data science realm, right? But that said, they're not really differentiators, right? They're table stakes. So my advice to new students is, don't worry too much about the specific company, right? Or the specific kind of role as an external consultant or internal consultant, because the most important thing is that you get those basic skills down, right? Using the tools of data engineering and data management, using visualization tools, using the various programming languages to execute analytical models, machine learning models of various types. So that's kind of my most core advice to folks coming into the career.
And that's good advice. And I guess to clarify, and put a different way as well, it may be that by the time you're in a senior role in analytics, you're not doing those analytics anymore, but you have to fundamentally understand them if you're going to manage them well. It's much like, I think, in sports these days, most referees, most coaches, if they weren't literally players themselves, they've been surrounded by whatever game they're involved in for their whole life. It's very hard to just suddenly be, 25-year-old and say, I want to become a soccer coach or a football referee. I mean, it's not that it's impossible, but the best are those who really fundamentally understand that which they're managing. And I think that's really the direction.
Totally agree with that, Bill. And, that applies even as you move through your career when you're managing a big team, you're making multi-million dollar investment choices in analytics technology, is that you get a basic grounding, right, that gives you the ability to kind of go, oh, does this make sense, right? Or if we invest in that technology versus this technology, what are the long-term implications of that? What are the efficiency puts and takes in terms of the labor and efficiency of the data scientists and data professionals working in your organization?
Let's switch gears here a minute, because recently, after all this talk about business, you recently, not unlike me, in fact, you beat me to it, left the business world and now work at another university, Emory, here in town, probably 20 minutes, 30 minutes away if there was no traffic, yeah, which is never true. What led you to that change to go to academia after your long time in business?
You know, that's interesting, because I never envisioned myself in academia, never. So when I left my last corporate job at Cox Communications, I essentially didn't know what I wanted to do. I kind of did both. I was looking for kind of the same kind of role that I'd had for the last several years, like, you know, an analytics executive on the client side, because that's how I defined myself. Right. At the same time, I set up a small consulting company and was doing some consulting work. Well, while I was in the corporate world, I partnered with some of the local programs, right? Even some with KSU, Georgia State, Georgia Tech, and Emory's program, which was just in its infancy when I was still at Cox, you know, and I went and volunteered my time. Right, to do mock interviews with students, speak to students about working analytics. So then at some point, Dr. Chalapa, the dean of our program here, just through happenstance, he found out that I was available and he called me and we talked about it several times. And, you know, I was at the stage in my career where I had a great, successful career, and I thought, hey, you know, this will be a really great opportunity for me to give back, right? And so what I really, really love about this role, and, you know, I think one of the things that, you know, is really cool about this kind of role is that the experience that I bring from a long career at all levels in analytics, right, both from a hands-on practitioner all the way up to an executive, is that I get to work with kind of the let's call it the raw material of the students, because, you know, you can't cover everything in a 10-month program, a very intense 10-month program. So they learn the tech skills and the data skills. And, you know, where I focus is, how do you engage as a consultant, whether that's an internal or external consultant, number one? And then how do you actually make decisions about the analytics solutions that you're building, right? What does that process look like? How do you operate as a team? So all of that real world experience, you know, makes me feel like I'm bringing something, integrating it with kind of the academic program and creating some value for students that, you know, is unique.
That's great. I feel the same way here too. I think it's really it's really fun and exciting to be able to you know, impart some of what you've learned on folks who haven't had the opportunity to learn such things yet, and the yeah, the level of enthusiasm and excitement that some of these students have in learning those things far exceeds that of the employees who you might have tried to coach. So definitely fun. What about today? You know, you've done these things over your career. Like, if you wake up in the morning today and you look at your calendar, what's an exciting day, right? What are the things that really motivate you the most and get you the most excited to get out of bed?
Wow, there's so much. So I would say right now, for example, the semester just started on the 9th. You know, we've got 13 different companies that we're working with on our capstone projects this spring. So we're in the process of getting those kicked off, right? And so I kind of act as the, you know, we try to make this like a real consulting project engagement as much as possible. So I'm kind of like the managing consultant over these 13 teams of new consultants. Right. And so I get to be involved with not only the process of coaching the students and kind of showing them by example how to ask the right questions of the client to get the project established, right? But at the end of the day, what I get to do is get exposed to the clients, a wide variety of client problems, client data. We're working with multiple cloud vendors in order to set up the computing environments. So, you know, in the current time frame, it's just wide open, working with, you know, 13 different teams and 13 different clients all at once, right? And so I love that. Now, when it's not capstone season or practicum season, you know, I actually spend a good amount of time just consulting with potential sponsors and talking to them about their business problems, just like, you know, I would in the consulting world, right? To try and determine, hey, do we have an opportunity here to create, you know, mutual value? Because it's really important to us that, as Dr. Chalapa likes to say, we don't do toy projects, right? Which most importantly means, is this something that the client would otherwise invest in through their own people or hire a consultant to do, right? And another dimension of it is this a real data science problem? You know, because, you know, out there in the world, you know, some companies are lower on the analytics maturity curve and, you know, that kind of thing. And there's sometimes not a good understanding of, okay, what's a data science project versus a BI or visualization project. And then, of course, the biggest, you know, success factor ultimately, in my experience with these practicum projects, is the client invested in the learning experience? Right? Because in some cases, they're just looking for cheap or free, really quality work, right? And that's okay, but that's not what we're doing, right? We're looking for people who want to spend the time to transfer their own knowledge and experience to our students.
Yeah, and I think that's an important distinction too. It's even if you're using a highly experienced professional consulting team, you have to put some of your time and resources in to make that project successful. Of course, working with students, it's going to be even more so. And I found, you know, the companies that embrace that and look at it as an exciting opportunity to get involved with the students and help them through the project, it goes great. In those rare cases, if a client hasn't fully understood what they're going to be on the hook for, it takes some, I think it takes some midstream adjustment at times, but I'm with you. I think most companies have started to look forward to working with students. I don't remember having these opportunities when I was in college.
Me too.
I feel like this is something, you know, most universities in the Atlanta area now, there are guys like you and me now running around who have a business experience, who are helping do these things. And so I think that's a great evolution within the academic world, that having these capstone style projects and these various corporate partnerships as part of the educational experience. I would have loved it when I came out of school, and I certainly would be more confident hiring somebody who had it than who did it.
Yeah. You know, you may have some more questions, but I just want to give a plug for the Atlanta data science and analytics educational community. You know, here in Atlanta, we have Kennesaw State's program, Georgia Tech's program, Georgia State's program, our program, and there are actually some others coming online now as well. So if you're looking for a great start to your career, I know this sounds like a shameless plug, but the various programs in town give you a set of offerings that, quite frankly, is as good as anything in the United States, if not globally. Right. In one metropolitan area.
I'd agree with that. And then say, and Atlanta's been growing. There's plenty of jobs here, too. So,
oh, yeah. You know what? That brings up another point, Bill, because, again, we work with lots of clients, you know, from Best Buy to Microsoft and, you know, Visa. What we're seeing is that many companies are building tech capabilities and specifically around data and analytics and data science because of the talent pool here, because of these multiple world-class data science and analytics programs. So there's starting to be a lot of building of presence by Fortune 100, Fortune 500 companies focused on data and analytics.
Well, I think that's a perfect note to end on, Scott. Thanks so much for giving me your time today. And I think you provided some terrific insights for folks. So thank you for coming.
Thank you, Bill. Glad to be here. Appreciate the opportunity.